Orange County and Northern New Jersey's community radio station, AM 1110 WTBQ.
Outside the U.S.
or Canada,
or looking for a place abroad, looking for that second home
outside North America,
or maybe you've always imagined what it would be like to take up residence in another country.
Well, then, this is the show for you. Welcome to the Expat Show,
hosted by Tay Aguirre.
Thank you very much, and a big welcome to the Expat Show. My name is Tay Aguirre,
and I am Greta Elias, your co-host for today. It's a pleasure to be part of the show.
It's a pleasure to have you, Greta. You know, Greta, I want to thank you very much for taking the time out to join us on the show. Folks, our co-host is a very special person in her own right. She's a writer, producer, performer in film, TV, and theater. Today, Greta runs an overseas buying service and helps companies as well to find their optimum location in New York City and around the country. So if you're a company and you're looking for a place to set up your office, Greta's the person to talk to. Greta is also president of her own company. Greta, tell us about your company and how you started it.
Well, I used to work for the airlines, and that's when I used to fly all over the world and in the United States and buy clothing for women and men.
Wow.
And that's how it all started. Today, I have a very nice business that if you're interested in me helping you dress you,
believe
make
me,
your life easier.
Well, Greta, everybody,
just go to my website.
Well, actually, since I have you here on the show, everybody knows that I need help dressing myself. So if
it
I
will
can
be
get
a very easy task. It will be so easy, it's not funny.
Well, that's good to hear. So, anyway, I want you folks that are listening to go online and visit Greta's website at GretaElias.com. That's GretaElias.com, and you can find out all the great stuff she does.
Thanks for the plug, Tay. You know how to make a person feel really welcome. Thank you.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, Greta, I think we're going to rename the show The Expat We Make You Feel Welcome and So Great Radio Show. What do you think of that name?
The Expat Show. It's a good enough name.
Right.
I think the listener gets the point.
All right.
If you're listening on the web, we want to congratulate you for making that quality decision to set your web browser to www.theexpertshow.com.
Mm-hmm.
We are also coming to you from studios of WTBQ, 1110 AM, Warwick, New York. The Expat Show is all about you, the adventurer, the dreamer, the pioneer. Whatever you're living in Mexico, Panama, Eastern Europe or Asia, or anywhere else in the world, you can easily connect with your worldwide community right here, every week, same time, same place.
You know, and we are particularly excited about today's show. This week, we're visiting the beautiful and mysterious country of Turkey and featuring North American expat Jim Straub, who lives with his wife in Istanbul. He's an author, former U.S. Marine, and a leadership consultant for a wide variety of international organizations. He's a great guy, and he's got a great story. You're going to love it.
We often ask why there are today over 8 million North Americans who have chosen to take residence in another country.
Mm.
Well, the reasons are countless. Retirement, a second home, a new first home, change of pace, a new job opportunity, setting up a business, even just plain old adventure.
Hey, that's why we created the show for and about you.
Living abroad can be a pleasure or nightmare if you don't have the right information. Now, all you have to do is tune in every Saturday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Istanbul time, and get connected.
Yes, exactly. You know, many of you have been writing and asking us, what are the best first steps a person or a family should take before considering that move abroad?
Relocating to a foreign country can be fun if you do it right. How do you do it right?
Yeah, exactly.
Takes months to plan and consider all aspects of relocation process. Make a checklist and jot down the factors that you will be involved in making your lifestyle change and making sure you do it right.
That's right.
We'll give you a rundown on the main points that you and your family have to take into consideration.
Exactly. And first of all, the first thing you want to do is to do your homework, like you said, Greta. So do some intensive research on where it is you're going and knowing what to expect. You can get that through books, the internet, and of course, listening to the Expat Show. You and your family will be well prepared for dealing with the inevitable effects of culture shock.
Think about your visa. The most important steps is to figure out the legal requirements of your move. The ins and outs, what money you spend will be worth the time and the hustle you'll save.
Put your documents in order. Considering this process, make sure you know what documents you will need beforehand.
Get moving. The next step is to begin thinking about the moving process itself.
All right.
The moving process involves selecting a good moving service. And it's essential that you base your choice on recommendations from people who have worked with a particular moving company before you make your choice.
The relocation process. Okay, so you've done your homework. Now it's a good idea to contact a relocation specialist before you move. If you are relocating with a company, your company should provide you with a relocation specialist, as the services of a relocation specialist are sometimes included in the company's budget for the expat relocation package. You might want to check with them. I mean, it's not always included, but many times it is included. So check that out with the company.
There's certain things to look out for in picking a home in another country. Proximity of the home to work and also your children's school is very, very important. Make sure your work and school and home are within close vicinity of each other, as well as other amenities like sports club, shopping centers, supermarkets, etc. They can significantly improve your quality of life.
Thinking about choosing a school for your kids? So first make sure you go and visit all the schools that you picked out and that you are being given guided tours of the facilities. Also, you want to see and compare the curriculums. So being bilingual is always a big bonus.
Also, don't be a procrastinator.
That's
right. If you're serious about moving abroad, start your process and stick with it step by step.
It sure is a big step. That's a fact. It's that fear of the unknown that rubs against us. So a lot of times we postpone what we need to do, And we're not consistent. There's a difference between postponing and postponing regularly. Sometimes it's difficult to know the difference.
Well said.
By the way, Greta, how do you say thank you in Hebrew?
Toda rabba.
Toda rabba?
That's right.
Toda rabba. All right. You know something? There is a way to know if you are really deep down a procrastinator. Did you know?
How is that?
Well, there are telltale signs, you know, sort of a procrastinator's creed.
Why would anybody be interested in that, Tay?
Well, it's important. You know, some people really want to know.
Like who? Most procrastinators don't want to know. This way they can keep on procrastinating.
You're right. But you know, Greta, we have a mission here. Sometimes it's providing vital information, direction. Sometimes it's about tough love.
Tough love? What makes you think that our listeners want to hear a dose of tough love? Of all places, the Expat Show. All anyone has to do at this point is click us off.
Sometimes you have to bite the bullet, and sometimes you gotta listen.
That's ridiculous. You actually put together a list?
Yeah, I did. I made up a list, yeah. A way to know if you're a procrastinator. Let's ask the crowd what they think.
Yes!
It's amazing. You always have that applause track when you need it.
No, it's a public service.
I just can't believe my ears.
Is this some crackpot list that you just made up this week?
This ain't crackpot, Greta. We owe it to our listeners.
Okay, whatever you say.
Thank you.
Anytime.
You know, don't judge it so fast. Hear me out.
Right.
In our continuing effort to help you, the listener, with life issues being an expat, I would like to present our procrastinator's creed. How do you know if you are following the procrastinator's creed? If anything is worth doing, it would have been done already.
Very funny.
Now that's more like it.
If at first you don't succeed, well, there's always next year.
Ooh la la.
You firmly believe that tomorrow holds the possibility for new technologies, astounding discoveries, and a reprieve from all your obligations.
Okay.
Here's one. You shall always decide not to decide.
Good.
Unless, of course, you decide to change your mind.
Boy, I tell you.
You know, Tay, I don't think this is helping anybody.
That's exactly the point, Greta. We don't know, but sometimes you have to know what not to do before you can know what to do.
Yeah, and this is one of those times.
Right, exactly. You will never put off until tomorrow what you can forget about forever.
Okay, enough.
Good.
We got a great show for you today. Our expert guest is a retired U.S. Marine, author of the book Managing Leadership. He now works as an international consultant for the companies and many international organizations. His name is Jim Straub, and he lives with his wife in Istanbul. He's got a great story.
He sure does. Also, Panama has become one of the most sought-after places to relocate for a number of reasons, not to mention the wonderful climate and the cost of living. So if you're thinking of buying real estate in Panama, you do not want to miss our segment coming up later on the show with Alvaro Aguilar. Alvaro is a partner for the very prominent law firm Lombardi, Cambra, and Aguilar, located in Panama City, Panama. Alvaro covers the step-by-step you need to know before purchasing property.
We get correspondence about insurance. What's out there? What is the best value? What is global insurance? Is it for you? We're going to hear from Brandon Sharkey, head of business development with a company that offers numerous global insurance packages.
Right now, let's go to our guest, North American expat originally from Detroit, Michigan, who's now living in Istanbul, Turkey, Mr. Jim Straub. Jim shares his background and some of the things that led him to put up his house and move to Turkey.
I'm a product of my generation. I'm a baby boomer, and I came from the age when, none of us really knew what we wanted to do when we grew up. So I went to college and after high school because that's what you were expected to do.
Sure.
And I wound up majoring in philosophy and minoring in history. And after a couple of years of that, I realized I didn't know what I was going to do with philosophy, so I wound up dropping out of school. Finally, at the tender age of 24, I was working on a construction site in North Dakota, of all places. And I realized for some reason that I wanted to be a lawyer. Now, you'll have to excuse me for that because I was young, but the way I wanted to become a lawyer.
Do we start the lawyer jokes now, Jim?
Well, they're easy, so why not? But I just thought I wanted to be a lawyer, and that's an expensive proposition, and I didn't have any money, and it was difficult to save any, so I joined the Marine Corps. They had an enlistment bonus.
Mm.
And that was my thinking. I would use the enlistment bonus plus the GI Bill once I got out to, finance an education in the law. But within a year of being in the Marine Corps, I realized I'd found a home, and I wound up staying home for about 21 years.
Were you writing as well while in the U.S.?
I wrote when I was younger, didn't publish anything, but everyone said I ought to write fiction, but I really had no interest in that. And once I came in the Marine Corps, I pretty much focused on that.
Uh-huh.
I did not do any writing until later in my career. I did some writing connected with my career. And at that time, I was encouraged by a number of people to go into management consulting, and I did. That's what led to that. But this book is the first one, yeah.
What led you to move to Turkey?
Well, the way that happened is I wound up marrying a Turkish woman.
That'll do it for you.
That's a pretty strong motivator right there. And I met her actually when I was assigned in Hawaii. She was there working in starting her academic career there. And that's where we met. And I started to learn Turkish with her. And she followed me around while I was in the Marine Corps. And when I retired, I figured it was time for her to start writing the orders. And she wanted to go home to Istanbul, and we went there. And the funny thing about it is that she still has a hard time, we moved there 4 years ago, and she still has a hard time adjusting to the place. And I adjusted right away. I love it because she was in the U.S. for so long. It was interesting to see that she suffered from culture shock as much as many other Americans did.
So your wife, being Turkish, but living in the U.S., was she a U.S. citizen or?
She lived in the U.S. for going on 30 years by the time we moved back.
I mean, she wanted to go back. Was that it?
Yes. Yes. I have interests in history and in politics and things that are related actually to being a Marine and also to my early education. And marrying a Turk just reinforced that, because that's part of the world is where a lot of things that still drive the world are generated, as we all know from the news today.
Oh, yeah.
So that just reinforced my interest. And the Turks, as you may know, earlier, 100 years ago, just ended a 600-year period of ruling that part of the world. And so it was very interesting to learn more about it.
So you are in Istanbul. That's where you live now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I was there some years ago. I think I mentioned to you a beautiful experience. And I ended up in a recording studio, as a matter of fact. And I was playing with a drummer, and we neither spoke each other's language, but musically we communicated just fine. So the big question for me was, what is Istanbul like these days? How do you get around? I was there 9 years ago and had a great experience, and it wasn't culture shock for me. Istanbul is a very modern city, did a lot of cool stuff. Even got to record some music with a new friend that I met over there, a guy named Ali, who was a local drummer. Had a great time. It was really fantastic. I learned very well that with music, anyone can speak any language. Anybody can communicate.
One of the issues with Istanbul is that it's a classic European or Asian city, in the sense that it's very large, but it wasn't built for the modern era. It was built 2,000 years ago. So it wasn't. It began growing and becoming fixed in its structure well before we had the sorts of types of transportation that we have today. So those have been added on top of this ancient city, and that can make it a little problematic. But they've done a pretty good job with it, I think. As time goes by, when you come to Istanbul, you see more and more of the amenities that you're used to in a large city like New York, for example. Istanbul is built across the strait that divides the continent of Europe and Asia, so a lot of the intercity communication is by boat, ferries and so on. It's second, as I understand it, only to New York in the amount of intercity traffic that's done by water. It has a couple of bridges now over the Bosphorus Straits. It's got a very modern and very clean and efficient metro system. A great bus system. It's got all the means of vehicle transportation that you could ask for. What it doesn't have is some of the things that Americans are used to, and I'm mentioning this because I've heard Americans complain about it. It doesn't have things like bike lanes or promenades for running or walking or anything along the shore or in the city or in the parks.
Wait a second. Wait a second. I'm from New York City, man. When you want to run, you just go out in the street and you run.
And you compete with the vehicles, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What is the best way to get around?
I think it's going to remind a lot of people in New York, you don't need a car. You use taxis, buses. They have a system of mass transit. It's called minibuses and dolmishes. A dolmish is sort of halfway between a bus and a cab, in that it has a fixed route, but it doesn't have a schedule. Dolmish is a Turkish word which means filled up. And at the beginning of the route, it just sits there until all the seats are filled. That's why it's called a dolmish. And then it'll take off on that route, and it also doesn't have any fixed stops. It'll stop wherever someone wants to get out, and it'll stop wherever someone wants to get in. That's a great means of transportation.
Probably sure. Oh, that's
in the city right now.
What kind of seasons?
Similar. It's on the same latitude as New York, and the weather is quite similar to that you'll find in New York. The winters aren't like they were where I grew up in Detroit, but you'll get snow and ice. I've never really experienced hail here, but you'll get all four seasons. you'll see him.
Here's Jim talks about the reaction he got when he let the cat out of the bag that he was moving to Turkey.
Well, I get reactions and resistance from my friends and family on almost every decision I make, and I certainly did. I mean, starting from the Marine Corps, and certainly this one is among them. I mean, as you may know, Americans don't know a whole lot about much outside of the U.S. And we've had people ask us how we like it in South America. You know, when we mention that we live in Turkey, they just don't know where we are. And those that do know where we are think that you know, there are bombs going off all over the place all the time. We had someone visit who was petrified that she was just going to have hand grenades and Molotov cocktails and suicide bombers exploding all around her as she drove in from the airport to our house. It's not like that at all. It's in fact, it's a little peculiar for me to hear people talk about how dangerous the Middle East is. I mean, I grew up in Detroit. That's a dangerous city. But Istanbul is at once it's the biggest city in Europe, but is also, according to Interpol, the safest city in Europe. And that comes from the culture. People tend to look out after each other, especially they look out after guests. Now, that doesn't mean stuff doesn't happen, but it's a safe city. But that's the issue that a lot of people got worried about. They thought that the events occurring in the Middle East, and me being an American, particularly a Marine, would be a problem, but it has not for a second.
Right now, we're off to bring you station identification. You are tuned to the Expat Show over Big Watt Radio, WTVQ 1110 AM, Warwick, New York, and over the World Wide Web at theexpatshow.com. When we come back, we've got a very informative interview with Brendan Sharkey from HTH Worldwide. If you're traveling internationally, if you live abroad and you've wondered how important is it to look at insurance for your family, what's out there, what's the best value for your money, is global insurance for you? Well, Brendan offers some great ideas about numerous global insurance packages, so stay right there. We'll be right back.
If you missed the Frank Truett Show, here's what you missed.
Well, we have Susan Wysocki and a young lady that you know from, well, from singing. Lots of you heard a lot of her recordings. And of
a
course,
great singer.
Great
her
singer.
Her own TV show in the 70s.
Indeed. Diane Carroll with us also. Guys, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I liked young lady. That was very nice, Frank.
Well, it makes us all feel young.
How about great singer?
Thank you. That sounds good.
Oh, there you go.
The Frank Truett Show, weekday mornings till 9 on AM 1110 WTBQ.
This is Teddy Smith. Join me on WTBQ.com from midnight to 2 a.m. All right. And buy more advertising. This is Teddy Smith. Join me Monday through Friday on the internet on WTBQ.
Wonderful, wonderful.
What's wonderful?
A lot of things, Greta. Our listeners, WTBQ Radio, our guests, you, Greta, you're wonderful. You're a wonderful co-host. Thank you.
Sure, Ted.
Anytime, Greta. Hey, this is a wonderful expat show, and we welcome you back. Coming up right now is Brendan Sharkey from HTH Worldwide to take us through a topic of a big importance, the insurance topic, global insurance. How important is it? Here's Brendan. Hi, Brendan. Tay, how are you?
I'm good, Tay. How about yourself?
Very good, good. Brendan, thank you so much for joining us on the Expat Show.
My pleasure.
Let's talk insurance. Brendan, obviously, the expats and those of us who do a lot of traveling, you know, we do traveling for all kinds of reasons, and there's always the possibility that the unexpected could happen when in a foreign country. You can get sick, you can get injured. If you don't speak the language and you aren't familiar with the protocol of a country, it can be a nightmare. What kind of insurance should they have when they're traveling overseas?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are a lot of different options available to expatriates and prospective expats. And the real key here is to understand the limitations of each of those options. And inevitably, you know, the longer that you are away from home, the likelier it is that you will become sick. So it's really a simple fact of life that you will be accessing health care in that new host city or host country. It's not just about the insurance. It's also about accessing quality health care. So what I'd like to do is just kind of give you an overview of the options that are available. And the thing to keep in mind with those options is, although your insurance plan may pay benefits, The real key is navigation, and you hit that on the head before. The best insurance programs are going to offer assistance services as well, and a component of that is they're going to find you a qualified doctor or a qualified hospital.
Yes.
So HTH Worldwide, for example, we have an elite community of providers now in about 178 countries. And when a physician contracts with HTH, one of the things that we do is we take a look at their background to see where they went to medical school, where they did their internship, residency, you know, are they board certified with the American Board of Specialties or maybe with a Commonwealth country equivalent, which is called the Royal College. If you're going to a hospital, you know, what clinical services are available at that particular facility. Because if you have a heart condition, for example, you're going to want to make sure that you have access to a facility that has a coronary care unit. So in terms of the actual insurance options available, there are local health plans available in many expat locations. The second option, I think the more viable option for people, is to buy a global health insurance plan. Most of those international health insurance plans that you buy will provide coverage in your host city and country, but also coverage worldwide. And
yes,
what that means for you is if you want to come back to the United States for treatment, you would, in fact, be covered to do so. And so that's very important, again, to understand what your access options are so that you're not just strictly covered at one clinic overseas under a local plan where maybe you subscribe to that hospital or clinic, or you're not just covered in that particular country. You know, if you're diagnosed with cancer, you would have the freedom to come back to the States, for example, and utilize services at Sloan Kettering or the Mayo Clinic. The important thing to take a look at is the benefits, because although the plan may have a $5 million limit, you have to really understand what's covered and what's not covered.
Yes.
And one of the things that we see very, very often on a lot of these plans is they have an exclusion for pre-existing medical conditions, and that's something that folks really have to look closely at.
So I see what you mean. I'm going to a foreign country. I may have a propensity, or maybe I just had a heart condition, and they could exclude me from coverage.
That's correct, and very often a lot of the international health plans will do that. So you want to take a look to see if, first of all, they will cover pre-existing conditions, and if they do, how are they covering that? Will they cover you right up to the policy maximum or not? A lot of the plans that we run into in the global marketplace have a one-year waiting period before they cover you for pre-existing conditions.
Wow.
And by contrast, you know, we've developed a product called the Global Citizen Health Plan. And if you've been covered by another domestic U.S. health policy, like a Blue Cross plan or an Aetna plan.
What about Oxford? Is Oxford...
Yes. Any U.S. filed and admitted health plan we would look at as creditable coverage.
Uh-huh.
So if you've had that prior coverage, we will look at that as creditable coverage, and as a result, there's no waiting period whatsoever. Other things to look at are, you know, does the plan cover for me for preventative services? Some plans may cover you, but there'll be a waiting period. And when they do finally cover you, they may only cover you at $100 or $150 per year for those preventative services. When somebody's having a medical emergency, we always encourage them to contact the local emergency services. If I'm in China, for example, I may be better off taking a taxi to the hospital versus waiting for the ambulance to arrive.
Interesting.
Some countries, believe it or not, the ambulance may take an hour to an hour and a half to show up.
Yes.
Which is a huge issue. So we'll tell you, we'll educate you about the healthcare system to really help you prepare.
How can we find out more about HTH?
People can go to travelhealthinsurance.com.
Great.
Or they can call 610-254-8700. Or via email, if listeners have questions, they can email customerservice@hthworldwide.com.
Bin bir gece geçse de sensiz dayandı yürek. Bir gün bitecek bu kıyamet. Yüzün gülecek. Sabret beni ellere verme. Affet ya da vur beni sen de. Bir karar ver sevgilim.
The music you're hearing is from Burak Uçan, a young Turkish composer, singer and songwriter who lives and works in Istanbul. Ya göğsüne alıp uyut beni, ya sonsuza kadar unut. Toprak olsan ölürüm, seni çok sevdim. Ateş olsan yanarım, seni özledim. Yalan olsan kanarım sevgilim. Bin bir gece geçse de sensiz dayandı yürek. Bir gün bitecek bu kıyamet, yüzün gülecek. Sabret, beni ellere verme, affet ya da vur beni sen de. Bir karar ver sevgi. Ya sonsuza kadar unut beni, ya sevmeyi öğret sevgilim, ya göğsüne...
Sounds so exotic, such a beautiful theme. Barak can be reached at www.myspace.com/BURAKUCKUN.
We want to invite any musicians, artists from Turkey and around the world to send us your stuff. We would love to hear your music. We'd love to play it on the show. You simply email us at info@theexpatshow.com, or you could call us at 914-422-1990.
Yeah, that's a great idea, Tay. Let the world hear about you and your music.
Absolutely. Right now, let's go back to our expat guest, Jim Straub, author and expat living in Istanbul, Turkey. In this segment, Jim speaks about the reaction of the Turkish citizens to North Americans living there.
And keep in mind the present political climate and the U.S. military presence in the area.
İnan ki çok, çok sevdim.
Turks come from a culture that is very hospitable to guests, and they're very serious about that. They like Americans as people. They like our many elements of our culture. They willingly and with open arms take in all various aspects of it. They are right now, however, extremely anti-American with respect to our foreign policy.
Yeah.
They don't like, there's nothing that we're doing in the Middle East that they like. They recently, you remember our revenge movies we came out with after Vietnam and so on, the Rambo movies.
Oh, absolutely.
They just put out one, it was one of the biggest budget movies they ever made last year, and it was in response to an incident where some American soldiers captured some Turkish representatives, some soldiers that were representing Turkey in northern Iraq. They captured them, put hoods on them, and then dragged them off to some detention center. And it humiliated and embarrassed Turkey tremendously. And this movie was basically built on that incident. And it was exceedingly anti-American. It showed Americans doing things like bombing weddings, civilian weddings in Iraq, so that the bodies could be taken to hospitals where organs could be farmed for Jewish interests around the world. That kind of thing is what you're getting in response to American foreign policy in Turkey right now. But they don't take it out on an individual. That you will not meet with personal hostility from a Turk.
And of course, there's two schools of thought regarding the ongoing Middle East conflict. Mm-hmm. Could you give us a point of view, maybe their point of view as to why we are so wrong in being out there?
This doesn't represent necessarily my point of view on our being there, but I'll tell you what I think is the basis of theirs. There is a lot of solidarity with other Muslim countries. There is a sense that America is being a bully, and it's talking out of two sides of its mouth. It talks about wanting peace and democracy and so on in the Middle East, But the Turks argue that Americans don't know the Middle East, and they're rebuffing the one friendly country in the area that could be a guiding hand for them in their operations in the Middle East, Turkey. A lot of their rejection of American foreign policy really is instinctively coming from their feeling that they have lost control over that area, and now they see us exercising it without taking recourse to their expertise. They resent that. They resent our power. They resent us being on top of the hill, and they're just one of the many people around the base of the hill throwing rocks at us, hoping we'll come down a peg or two. There's a lot of that in their reaction to our foreign policy. There's not much logic in it. They have had an opportunity to be a player, to be an influential voice in how our operations in Iraq would take place, and they rejected that. They just completely rejected that, but they don't want to take the consequences of that rejection when they voted down giving permission to American forces to use some bases in southeastern Turkey to prosecute the war in Iraq. That's when they rejected an active hand in helping us, and in so doing, lost an opportunity to influence events there. There's a Kurdish organization that is devoted to propagating unrest in southeast Turkey and by the security forces there. And that force would probably not be there right now if Turkey had helped us, offered their help to us when we wanted to do a two-front attack into Iraq from the south and the north. They basically took that northern option away from us. And there is a lot of resentment of the American government and military and the decision-making circles about that still. The Turks, what I'm saying here is that the Turks are refusing to connect the consequences of that decision of theirs with the decision. They want to blame both on us. They want to blame their being forced to make the decision on us, and they're being forced to take the consequences of the decision they took on us. That's a typical response around here in the Middle East, wherever you go. No one is at fault for their own problems. America is at fault. You hear the argument even in America that we're at fault for terrorism. Well, that's a grotesque argument, but it's very common here.
Yes, of course, that we funded the resistance in Afghanistan against the Soviet Union, and those same people are turning against us.
That's right, and quits, but not only that, whatever we do that upsets Middle Easterners is responsible for the terrorism with which they respond to our foreign policy initiatives. So our support for Israel, or perhaps our support for a pipeline going here, or for a border being drawn there, well, that's our fault. I mean, that causes terrorism.
Yes.
Whatever we do, whatever policy we undertake, that's pretty silly stuff. But it's a nice attitude to take, because no one wants to be responsible for their own. You know, the Arabs themselves were the roof and the crown of things for hundreds of years. While America was Europe was a barbarous backwater. No civilization, no science, no technology. The Arabs were on top of the world for hundreds of years. Following them came the Turks. Now we're on top, and they would love nothing better than to find us at fault for all the problems, since we're responsible, more or less, for the world these days.
Yes, and that must put a lot of stress on your living there. Now, in Mexico, for example, it is not a good idea for a expat to talk about Mexican politics. Is that the case in Turkey?
Well, I think what you'll find, that's a good question. I think what you'll find is that they will let you say what you have to say, but they probably will not respond to it, or they will turn the subject in a different direction. They do take the attitude that, you know what, you're not one of us, and you really don't have a right to get into the elbowing and the shoving sort of political dialogue that we have.
Yes.
Particularly when you start critiquing certain fundamental institutions of the modern Turkish state. Principal among those is the founder of the state, Atatürk, because his influence still is very strong in how the government conducts itself. And there have been some criticisms of that. Lots of American observers come over and throw out these facile, easy, prescriptions on how the Turks, if they just did this or just did that, everything would be fine. That's the sort of thing you want to avoid when you're in Turkey, particularly a criticism of Ataturk, because he's viewed with the reverence and the regard that we view our founding fathers, Washington, all the way to Lincoln, who wasn't a founding father, but he has all of that reverence. And you don't come into the country, even to a Turk who himself might criticize Ataturk, and criticize Ataturk to a Turk. Food is inexpensive, pretty much. You can find anything you want, and it's pretty inexpensive. It's less expensive outside of Istanbul, but even in the city, it's inexpensive. You can find any food you want, and it's inexpensive. The clothes, my wife says, you can find them. Turkish made goods tend to be more expensive in Turkey than in the U.S. because the taxes are pretty high here. In Turkey, the equivalent cost of a gallon of gas is $7.50.
Oh my God!
It may be the most expensive gasoline in the world, and it's because the state taxes products and services that it believes are being consumed by people who have money, and so they can get it from them, and they can get it from them in a way that can't be evaded. So they tax gasoline very, very strongly.
How is your electric bills?
Those are fine. I mean, we probably pay a total of $100 a month for electricity and water and phone, maybe a little more when you add the phone in. Communications there are great. There's cable service for TV and Internet. I had that for a while. I have ADSL now, DSL they call it here in the States, for computer service. Everything, it's fine. No problem. Everyone's got a mobile. Mobile service is very robust there. They love their entertainment. I mean, there's always something going on. At the drop of a hat, the Turks will break into song. They will. I've been on
That's
ferry
terrific.
Where, oh, they just love it. I've been on ferry boats where people just start singing old folk songs or
yes.
modern pop songs, and they all join in. And the children, you know, you go to a concert in Turkey, and you'll see three generations of families there, four generations. It should be grandpa and great-grandpa and mom and the babies and the grandkids are all there at the same concert. And they're waving the kids back and forth to the music, and the kids are running down onto the stage and dancing. I mean, everything is done together there, and everybody enjoys it together. You don't have the generation gap there that you have in the States. Entertainment is a key way they express their cross-generational solidarity, I guess. The money is called the lira. It used to be... the standard lira, the Turks underwent a period of extremely high inflation,
yeah.
to the point that 2 years ago, $1 would buy, 1,600,000 lira.
Wow.
And that obviously is going to cause some problems when you're trying to deal with money here, because, you know, you can't figure out what the value is of what you're spending. You spend a million... you know, 3 million lira for a ferry boat ride or something. That
wow.
seems a little extraordinary. But what they did, basically, is they dropped six zeros a year and a half ago. And as of now, they call it the new lira. And the exchange rate right now is about 1.5 to 1. So $1 is equal to 1.5 lira, roughly.
Living in Turkey, how fascinating. Jim gives his take on what's the biggest challenge living there.
To me, the biggest challenge is the language. The language... the Turkish language has the verb at the beginning of the sentence, and you know, everything, the structure is backwards. If I was going to say, for example, I'm going to go to the store to get some bread in Turkish, the literal translation would be "bread to get store going, am I?" If that's all you have to say, then you can probably figure that out. But if you get into any conversations that are any more complex than that, you might have some problems, and I do. The biggest area is jokes. In English, you know, the joke is the direct object. It comes at the end, obviously. But if the sentence is the reverse, if you're going to speak in grammatically correct Turkish, you're going to be given the punchline out at the beginning of the joke.
Oh, my God.
And I've had that, you know, if you're trying to tell an American-style joke, and I've had that happen. My wife would, when we lived in the States, would sometimes tell me a joke she had heard from somebody on the phone or over the Internet, and she would translate it, and then she'd laugh at the end of it. She would be crying. She was laughing so hard, and it made no impression on me at all. So then she'd retell it in Turkish, and it was funny.
That's
hard conceptually to get used to.
Yeah, because I've had a habit of telling a joke and throwing the punchline up front, and I'm always thrown out of parties, you know?
Well, that happens in Turkey. The biggest problem, the other problem I have with Turkish is, of course, the vocabulary. I learned Turkish in the States from books, so my grammar was fine, but my vocabulary was limited. And the first time I went to Turkey, I was by myself. I was still not with my wife. I was in the Marine Corps doing an exercise in Turkey. And I went to a restaurant, and I wanted to order some soup. And I couldn't quite remember the word, but it came to me. The consonant sounds were cha-ra, pa, the vowels were o-a. I said, okay, I've got it. And then the waiter came, and I ordered what later turned out to be socks. What I said was, I want some chorap, which is socks. And what I should have said was chorba. So the consonants and the vowels are right. I just put them together wrong. Chorba is soup.
So he took his shoes off.
Anyone you talk to in the street who's a little bit over you use a term called abi, which means older brother, or abla, which means older sister, or aunt or uncle. And that shows not just merely respect, it shows a regard, an affection for people, which they expect, and they show some degree of responsibility for you. They'll supervise you right there on the street if you're doing something they don't think is right. A perfect stranger will do that. And so we've had incidents where we were flying in and out of the country or inside the country, and security guards or just people on the street would go up to my wife and ask her, say, who is this guy? Is he your husband?
Oh, boy.
And she'd say yes, and they'd go, oh, okay, then go ahead. Because they don't want, you know, a Turkish girl being taken advantage of by some, you know, foreign schmuck or something.
So, that's right.
So that's a little unsettling. But,
certainly.
It's also... You know, on the one hand, it's charming, but it can be suffocating.
Still, one of the hottest places to travel to and to relocate is Panama. Panama presents some very exciting opportunities for living and purchasing property. But before you jump in to buy that second home or retirement property, it's vital to know the facts and the step-by-step process. Coming up right now is Alvaro Aguilar, partner in the law firm Lombardi, Cambra & Aguilar. Alvaro talks with me about purchasing property and how it's done in Panama. His firm is located in Panama City, handles everything from expat stuff, including incorporation, trust, immigration, taxes, and real estate. Here's Alvaro. Thank you, Alvaro, for joining us on the Expat Show.
Thank you for having me yourself.
I want to travel to Panama, and I want to purchase a second home for me and my family on the beachfront. What would be the smartest approach? What is a good step-by-step approach for making this happen in Panama?
It is very important to consider that in Panama, there is no difference whatsoever when you buy a property if you're a foreigner or a national. Unlike other countries, they have exactly the same rights, except when buying border property, which is not actually one of the attractive properties for the market. Like any real estate search, once you have found your property through real estate agents or through the classifieds or just by walking around the sections that you like, it is very important to conduct a title search on the property. This can be made through an attorney or through an appraiser, one of the several appraisal companies that exist in Panama and are recommended by the banks.
Yes.
Of course, it is very important and helpful if that attorney or appraiser also speaks your language, if he speaks English, because the language barrier can become an obstacle, especially when going over paper titles of other paperwork. There are some limitations to consider. For example, in islands, island property is subject to certain limitations to ensure the right of every individual to have an access to the sea. So that's something that an attorney should look at to ensure that you have proper rights at a beachfront property. Once you are satisfied with the results of the title search, and you have to consider the option of the financing. The financing can be granted by a Panamanian bank. Some of them are actively seeking the expat market They have bilingual English-speaking personnel. They even have Cantonese-speaking personnel.
Wow.
And they and they will ask for, of course, your references and life insurance. For people that are above 65, this can be an obstacle or hurdle that will make them consider instead refinancing your first home and with the funds that you acquire from that operation, purchase your second home in Panama.
In Mexico, when you want to buy a piece of property on the water, you are restricted because you're not a citizen. Are you saying that in Panama, we also, as a foreigner, as a North American, we can purchase property on the water?
The only restriction that exists is for foreigners not to buy property 5 kilometers away from the borders with Costa Rica and Colombia, the neighboring country.
Oh,
which, anyways, that's jungle. If you want beachfront property, there is really no restriction whatsoever. They don't consider it as a border.
I can own the property in my name.
Yes, sir. You can. Once you have dealt with property and the financing issue, in order to secure your property right, you have to execute a purchase agreement before a Panamanian public notary. Maybe because of you don't want to buy a property in a rush, you have to leave and leave the paperwork being dealt with. You can grant a power of attorney while you are in the States for an attorney or a real estate agent of your complete trust to make that appearance before the notary. Or in turn, you can have an attorney incorporate a corporation of which you can be the shareholder and have the president of that corporation make the appearance before a notary. Once that agreement is registered before the Panamanian registry of property, you are 100% owner of your dream property. And it is very important that this title be registered because this is the guarantee of your property rights being respected in the future.
In the United States, a notary is simply a witness. And in Mexico, a notary has more of a legal position. Is that the same thing in Panama, where a notary has a high legal position?
Well, I guess your background from Mexico really helps you a lot to understand the situation. It is similar to the Mexican situation that you just mentioned.
Yes.
There, for example, just in Panama City, there are only about 12 attorneys. However, it shouldn't become difficult because if they have a sort of understanding with a local attorneys to ensure that the procedure does not have to be time-consuming and it's fully legal.
How we can find out more about your legal firm?
You can find about our law firm at www.offshorelca.com, offshore with two F's, or also at www.lombardicambra, that's Lombardi, like the coach, and Cambra, CAMBRA.com.
Thank you, Alvaro. Here, Jim Strapp talks about his day, what it's like.
Well, curiously enough, most of the projects I do do not involve work in Turkey. They involve advising Turks or Americans who are doing work either outside of Istanbul or outside of Turkey. So I just wind up meeting with them in Istanbul. Now, I live on the Asian side, so what I will do is and I prefer using public transportation, so what I'll do is take one of those dolmishes I mentioned down to the water on the Bosphorus, and I'll get in a ferry, a classic ferry that's been around for probably 40 or 50 years, and I will spend the first 20 minutes of my day crossing the Bosphorus Straits, looking down, looking north to the two bridges that Mehmet the Conqueror built 500 years ago. I'll look at Hagia Sophia. I'll look at the Sultanahmet. Hagia Sophia is the oldest, the large church. It was built in 500. initially, 1,500 years ago. Right there, the skyline of the classic old town of Istanbul. That's what greets me. That's what I look at every morning as I cross from Asia to Europe on this ferry boat with all these Turks around me. It's a great thing, and every time I do it, I can't believe I live in the city. It's the most amazing, possibly the most amazing city in the world.
I remember in winter, you could smell the coal in the air, the coal burning. Is that still happening?
Natural gas has come to the city now, so mm-hmm. that's much less now. The city's less polluted than it was, although it's a huge city, and it's in a basin, so it still does hold pollution.
You would hear the prayers about in the early morning?
Yep. You hear them called five times a day, that's right.
Okay, so you get somewhat of the picture of life in Turkey. Unfortunately, we don't have enough time to explore everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the beautiful. We will do more stories of expats living there. What we want to play here is what Jim's advice for expats already living in Turkey and for those who are thinking about moving there.
Turkey is a terrific location. You will enjoy yourself greatly. The people here, they love and respect Americans. Despite the fact that they have some problems with American foreign policy right now, they love and respect Americans, American culture, what America has done in the world, what America stands for in the world. So you'll be welcome here, rather in Istanbul and in Turkey. It is a modern country. It is a secular country. And the most religious people will, also the Ottoman Turks were historically the most tolerant of the Muslim empires, and Islam is a tolerant religion. It's the only religion, if I can mention this, of the major three religions in our culture, Islam, Judaism, Christianity, that tolerates the presence of the other two, that mentions and accepts the presence of the other two.
The impression, certainly, is that Islam, or maybe it's fundamentalist Islam, is the opposite, is not tolerant.
Yeah, well, we're certainly not exposed to the day-to-day practice of Islam by average Muslims in America. We're exposed to what is going to attract excitement and interest, and that's the fundamentalist and the violent behavior of radicals. Islam is divided very broadly between the Sunnis and the Shia, and the Shia are extremely radical. These are street fighters, these guys, and they want to throw down the guys in power and let the power pass to the people. And so they have a particularly radical view of the West and of the rest of Islam. So that's where you see that sort of thing. But the Ottomans and the Turks generally have always been a very tolerant people of other from every aspect of life, not just religion, but also of religion. And you will experience that here. You'll be comfortable. You'll be relaxed. You can practice your religion. And there are a number of missionaries that come here. I would think that a North American should, first of all, get rid of any attitude of superiority and any tendency to convey the sense that we have answered all of society's problems and technology's problems in the States, and one day you'll catch up, that kind of thing. That condescension will be resented here a lot. The Turks are very hospitable. And it can be very dangerous to mistake their graciousness for deference. They're not, and Europeans make this mistake because Europeans have a natural class consciousness that we don't have in America. You know, in America, we know that some people may be at this or that particular stage in their lives. They may have attained this level of economic or educational accomplishment. But that's just a statement of where a particular person happens to be at a certain time in his life. In Europe, it's a statement of who that person is, hereditarily, his parents and whatever his kids will be. It still is that way in Europe. And when they come to Turkey and they see the Turks behave in such a gracious, hospitable, welcoming way, they assume they're behaving like servants. And then when you start treating them that way, you're going to get yourself a wake-up call, and it's going to put you on the sidewalk. So
I don't want to end up on the sidewalk, that's for sure.
Well, and you know, they take an incredible amount before they will finally say, you know what, this guy needs to get a little wake-up call, and someone will give it to him. They're really extremely tolerant. And the funny thing about that is that just reinforces the predisposition of the person who's making the mistake that he's right.
Yes.
They continue to tolerate that behavior. But anyway, the point here is that just come, be open-minded about the culture, particularly the collectivist side of it, because people will take it. They'll ask you if you're married. They'll ask you if your parents are still alive. Now, yes. that always has struck me as a very unusual question. We don't like having personal questions asked of us here. How much do you make? How many, you know, that sort of thing. They don't mean anything by that. They just want to make sure you're all right. They want to make sure it's a major event in a Turk's life when he loses a family member, especially a parent. Now, certainly it is for us, too, but you can't imagine how important it is for a Turk. So they want to make sure you're not alone, that you have your mom and your dad. And if you don't, well, they might open their house to you. They might become your mom or your dad. I mean, be prepared for that sort of thing. Be prepared for people people you hardly know, maybe, to take an active interest in your life.
Well, it looks like that is all the time we have left.
Wherever you are living, abroad or planning to, make our show a part of your plans. You'll be glad you did.
Thank you, Jim Stroud, for taking the time and talking with us about your story.
Thank you, Brandon Charkey, for that segment on global insurance.
And thank you, Alvaro Aguilar, for speaking about what we need to know before buying property in Panama.
To Frank T., our crack engineer.
All right.
Also, a great people at 1110 WTBQ Radio. Appreciate all your support.
And a big thank you, especially to all of you who tune in and help make our show the expat place to tune in. Remember, where your dial should be, WTBQ Radio and TheExpatShow.com.
We're just a click away on your web, wherever you are, every Saturday, 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
So, until next time, see you next week.
See ya.